Secretary Grant.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Speaker. Mr. Deputy Speaker, I've just returned from South Africa, and I would like to say that South Africa is a very beautiful country, full of resources. It's a very tragic country, and one gets the feeling when one goes to South Africa that the situation is extremely tense, and that unless something happens reasonably quickly and with substance, there can be an almighty bloodbath in that country. I was a member of the Reverend Jesse Jackson's party. The party was invited by the South African Council of Churches and the African National Congress. On our way to South Africa, we visited Zambia, and we were the guests of President Kaunda. In Zambia, we had meetings with the ANC leadership in exile. Then we went on to Johannesburg and Cape Town, where we met various people, including the South African Council of Churches, clergy from all the South African churches, including Catholics, Presbyterians, Anglicans, Methodists, African independent churches, etc. We also met the Pan-Africanist movement, the United Democratic Front, Soweto People's Committee, Soweto Teachers, NACTU, Azanian People's Organization, representatives of the British Council, lecturers in the University of the Western Cape, the National Sports Congress, Western Cape Traders Association, several ANC and church leaders like Oscar Mpetha, Reverend Alan Bosak, Archbishop Tutu, and Mr. Frank Chikane. We also met the mayor of Cape Town, and of course, Mr. Deputy Speaker, I also met Mr. Nelson Mandela. Yeah. All of those people, Mr. Deputy Speaker, except the British consul officer, and I didn't ask him for his opinion, agreed that sanctions had to be maintained and asked that I take this message back to the United Kingdom. And I was able, Mr. Deputy Speaker, to see the oppression at first hand. On Saturday last week, at Crossroads.
Just walked in.
On Saturday last at Crossroads, Mr. Deputy Speaker, which is just outside Cape Town, we held a peaceful rally with some 2,000 to 3,000 people. As soon as our party got into our vehicles, vigilantes started shooting at the crowd. The police then started shooting. The Kitts Constable, who are the paramilitary police, who are given 3 weeks training and given rifles and shotguns, surrounded our van as we were assisting a man who had been shot in the stomach into a lorry. I have spoken about the Kitts Constable before in this house, and as they pointed their guns at us, I couldn't help hoping that they hadn't read Hansard. Several people were injured, Mr. Deputy Speaker, and I was able to witness a perfectly peaceful rally being fired on by the security forces. The whole incident was witnessed by TV cameras, and a dossier has been submitted to the Minister of Justice for his investigation. I was also told by the British Consul officer that a peaceful crowd had gathered outside the British Consul the day before to protest at the Gatting cricket tour. They had been refused permission to demonstrate outside the Wanderers Stadium in Johannesburg. The Deputy Consular General himself had agreed with the police that the protesters could remain. But as soon as his back was turned, the police immediately baton charged the crowd, and several injuries resulted. And one got the impression very quickly that as soon as anyone of any substance turned her or his back onto from a peaceful situation, the security forces immediately went in order to deal with those people who were doing nothing other than enjoying themselves peacefully. Mr. Deputy Speaker, the continuation of the state of emergency in South Africa allows these atrocities to take place because it empowers the police and the security forces to act without any accountability whatsoever. And that is why the ANC and the other liberation movement have called for the cancellation of the state of emergency as one of the prerequisites for talks. Certainly.
heard with sadness of his account of what happened to that demonstration, obviously have no reason to doubt his word. But as he was an eyewitness to this particular incident, and obviously is well aware of other incidents, would it not have been sensible for him to seek some meeting and discussion with members of the security forces and indeed with members of the South African government? He gave us a great list of the people who he spoke to and who he met while he was there. But if I ascertained him right, there wasn't one government minister or indeed government official that he attempted to speak to. Would it not have been perhaps prudent to have put had the other side of point of view put to him, which he may not have liked, but at least he could then have come back and been, I would suggest him, somewhat better informed in his information to the House.
Mr. Deputy Speaker, can I say to the right on to the Honourable Gentleman that we submitted a dossier to the Justice Minister, and the Reverend Jesse Jackson, who was the head of the delegation, actually tried to get a meeting with him, but he was out of town. Can I say that on the day that I returned to this country, there were meetings set up with Mr. The Clerk, with Mr. Pickbota, and Mr. Fillion, and these are, of course, senior members of the cabinet. And those meetings took place, and I have yet to hear an account of what transpired at those meetings. But it was quite clear that the party intended to meet as many people as possible. The party also intended to meet representatives of the Dutch Reformed Church, and also Mr. Gacha Buthelezi, and other people. Mr. Deputy Speaker, the situation in South Africa is indeed a very complex one. It is a new situation. We have here a state which has been maintained on the basis of violent and evil oppression of black people by a minority white population. And now at last we have a chance of placing, of trying to do something about democracy within that country. And I think it's important to understand how South Africa has reached this point and what worldwide pressures have prevailed on both government and the democratic forces. There can be no doubt that sanctions and armed struggle have had a major part to play. If we just look, if we just take one example in the armed struggle, I refer to the battle at Quita Cuenavale, where the combined forces of the Angolans and the Cubans forced the South Africans and the forces of Savimbi into retreat to such an extent that now, for the first time after decades of trying, we have a newly emerging independent Namibia. And I believe that the battle at Quita Cuenavale also assisted the South African government in changing its mind. I give it to my
friend. I agree that the battle of Quita Cuenavale also gives the case for sanctions. Because of the arms embargo, the aged mirage of the South African government were outgunned by the MIGs of the Angolan government.
Absolutely, my friend is absolutely correct. And the it was quite clear during those battles that the South Africans were not able to match the firepower of the Cubans and the Angolans. I think it's important, Mr. Deputy Speaker, to understand too the complexity of the South African society, which few of those who have not visited the country can appreciate. I have only had a slight taste of it in a few weeks, and I know that it's an extremely complex situation. South Africa at this moment is very volatile, and it is not unlike a boiling pot. To suddenly take off the lid without turning down the fire would be to risk the escape of a cloud of steam which would scald all of those people of whatever color who are gathered around it. The task which faces Mr. Mandela is to turn down that fire so that successful negotiations can ensue. It is precarious and challenging, and such an undertaking needs the full understanding of members in this House. Now, Mr. Deputy Speaker, I'm in no doubt whatsoever that the Mr. Mandela that I was privileged to meet is equal to that task. He exudes a strength, a calmness, and an authority which is remarkable in a man who has been incarcerated for 27 years. He is astonishingly without bitterness, but remains standing full square behind the principles for which he has sacrificed so much, the principles of a non-racial and democratic South Africa in which black and white people alike could share equally. It is clear from what he has said since his release, that he is a responsible and wise statesperson who is now ready to play his part in steering South Africa into the future, and who knows full well how perilous and inflammable the scenario is. What then should be our role in Britain if we genuinely wish to see a peaceful transition towards democracy in South Africa? I have to tell the House, Mr. Speaker, that it is my belief that we should see ourselves as outsiders. Outsiders, that is, with a grave responsibility, given the sorry contribution which this country has made to prolonging the system of apartheid, but outsiders nevertheless. We should not seek to inflame the situation by raising red herrings about the danger of a white backlash or raising the bogey of the armed struggle. If there is a danger of such a backlash, Mr. de Klerk is well aware of it, and it is something which he is well able to handle. So far as the armed struggle is concerned, again, Mr. de Klerk himself does not seem to have been surprised at the ANC's continuing commitment to this, and neither should be the British government. It is a weapon which I believe the ANC must hold in reserve in the negotiations which lie ahead, in the event of there being no movement on the dismantling of the institutions of apartheid, which have themselves perpetrated so much violence against the mass of South Africans. Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister seeks to make petty distinctions between different kinds of sanctions. She talks about voluntary sanctions, etc. But the fact of the matter is that to the man or the woman on the omnibus in Soweto or on the train that's going into Johannesburg, these distinctions don't really mean much. As far as they are concerned, the fact that the Prime Minister of Britain talks about the removal of sanctions is a matter of great anxiety and grief to me. They are not concerned and they are not aware of the ramifications of discussions with the Commonwealth leaders, of discussions with the European community, and they frankly couldn't care less. But they are concerned when they see what they believe to be a sellout from Britain. Neither, Mr. Speaker, must we rush to destabilize the situation, as the Prime Minister has done by pressing for these sanctions, for the removal of these sanctions. It is the demand worldwide that sanctions stay until the pillars of apartheid are removed. To remove sanctions now would be the height of irresponsibility. It would strengthen the hand of the South African government against the mass of the people who have already given so much to reach this position and who are already at a disadvantage in any future negotiations. Mr. Deputy Speaker, if the British government really wants to see a way forward, it should be attempting to ensure parity in the capability of both sides to negotiate. It seems that the Prime Minister wishes to see the mass democratic movement going naked into the negotiating chamber. Mr. Deputy Speaker, Mr. Mandela and the mass democratic movement are already at a gross disadvantage. They do not have the backing of a vast army of civil servants and all the paraphernalia of diplomacy which the South African government clearly has. They have few resources. Their key personnel are scattered throughout the world, subsisting in impoverished exile communities. The government should therefore, our government this is, should therefore compare its attitude to the South African situation with its attitude to the restoration of democracy in Eastern Europe. There it has given some £25 million to assist the process of democracy. The government should therefore come to this House with similar proposals for funding the democratic forces in South Africa. Britain has done enough damage in South Africa. Let it now be bold and positive, and let us put our money behind all that we have mouthed about supporting the oppressed people in South Africa. Mr. Deputy Speaker, the soundest investment we can make is to ensure that when there are future negotiations, those people are properly prepared to play their full part.